Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Today with me, I have the absolutely gorgeous Aurélie Herbert, and Aurélie's business is the French Art of Seduction. Now, that is a little bit interesting, isn't it? What do French cuisine, fashion, and romance have in common? In depth, authenticity and passion, they are the key ingredients to the most delicious meals and gorgeous looking garments. They are also the essence of a thriving romantic relationship. Originally from the country of love, Aurélie is the founder and CEO of the French Art of Seduction. She's certified NLP practitioner, relationship master coach, and she helps singles and couples to become and attract their ideal partner. I like that idea, to become as well, not just someone we go outside looking for. And she helps them create their dream love story. Working on mindset strategies, using relationships and conflict as personal development tools, she guides her clients to fully accept themselves and others, to communicate their boundaries in a healthy way, and create space and flow in their lives so they can experience the most fulfilling relationships. Welcome, Aurélie. I am so interested in this topic. Having been married for 42 years and in the same relationship for that long. Yes, I know. It's a long time, isn't it?
Congratulations.
It's a whole lot of, like any relationship, you know, there's good times, bad times, and you know, comfortable times, and it all works on different levels. So I'm really interested in learning from somebody that works in this all the time as to how, you know, we can improve our relationship, but how other people can really improve their relationship. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. And I love love. So anytime I have the opportunity to share about it, I'm in.
It's that there's so many different types of love, though, isn't there? We're going to obviously be talking about love of partners and love in relate, but it's love in any sort of relationships. I know when my usual go-to when I talk about, I've got sons that are in their 30s and mid-30s, late 30s, actually it's today, I'm not sure this day is going out to the public, but today is my oldest son's 39th birthday. And so the relationship you have with your children is really quite different. And I've always said, you love your children. You had to, you know, that was part of the rules of having them. Sometimes you like them, most of the time you do. But when I got grandchildren, I fell in love with it. It was a different a sort of love. So and the love that I have for my husband and then love for friends and other family, it's all very different, isn't it?
It is different. And at the same time, the common denominator of all these relationships is you. So even though you're experiencing a different feelings or emotions or thoughts about these different people, they're all different aspects of you. So they reflect some parts of you. And so sometimes they're very triggering, and that's where, you know, you've got some work to do. And sometimes they're really soothing and you're like, oh yes, I got somewhere. But what you can see outside of you is essentially protection of yourself. So it's really interesting to see how it pans out and how we can get frustrated at some people sometimes and just, you know, pointing the finger where really we should point it back at ourselves. Relationships are really fascinating, and that's really, as you said, my favorite personal development tool, because we can learn so much by looking at relationships with other people.
I really like that concept, and you forget about that, but pointing the finger back at ourselves, That is just so important because it's only us that can change anything.
Absolutely. Like, we can't change anyone. What we see outside of us, like coming back to the idea of people are mirrors, or our perception is projection, simply because our brain can't absorb all the information out there. Like, I think quantum physics is now saying like 400 millions of information every given second. Mm. Our brain is only able to process 134. So 134 out of millions of information, the brain can't take too many information. So it's deleting, distorting, generalizing information, skipping a lot of information. So what our filters in our brain are working with creates our reality. So what we see out there is really what's inside of us. And that's really fascinating.
So then when we're finding fault in a relationship, then is that looking, possibly we're looking at a reflection of ourselves? Is that what you mean?
So, yeah, so when we first fall in love, so the honeymoon phase, we only see the good aspects of the person. We resonate on a certain level. And then at some point we shift and we start seeing that the other person is not perfect. Like, life is 50-50. So as much as the other person has their good and their not so good sides. And that's where the work starts, because really that's when the happy hormones are starting to come down and the shit hits the fan. I don't know if you use this of language, but and where we need to take responsibility for ourselves, because in a relationship it's not 50 plus 50 equals one, it's 100% of a person. It's a whole person with a whole person come together to create something new. So it's really 1 + 1 = 3 in the end. Yeah, I don't know if I'm answering your question.
that whole giving of yourself 100%, I mean, that we often don't. And I became a fan of maths a couple of years ago, for those that's Married at First Sight. So yeah, and I blame a friend of mine, Hayley, for it was her fault. And but the whole, you know, expectation that you're going to, you know, feel this intense spark with somebody and build this relationship, they're sort of going through this whole phase within about 6 weeks, aren't they, that you would normally take maybe 6 years or longer to go through. And that's intense.
Well, that's very, very intense, because I think the best relationships are built up on friendships, you know, like you want to know, you love the person not just for their good sides. And that's why I think there's a big crisis in the dating market industry. I don't like to call it like that, but for people who are single and looking for someone, there's this illusion that there's a, especially with the apps, that there's an infinity of potentials, and if this one's not good enough, I'll skip to the next one, and looking for someone who's perfect. And that's a total fluke. Why should anyone be perfect if we're not ourselves? And is perfection even a possibility? As I said, life is 50-50, so it's more about accepting all the aspects that life has to offer, and I don't think there's anything negative. There's lessons to be learned instead. So,
I really...
Mass is a really interesting chart.
Yeah, and look, having been married for so long, or being with the one person for so long, that's exactly what it has to be. You can't, you know, it's really interesting when we look from ourselves, we see faults in others, and things that we know are faults in themselves and ourselves, or we either one don't recognize them, or two, we go, well, that's okay, that's not that big a deal. But it may be a trigger for somebody else, as they're not closing the cupboard door might be a trigger for you. So, yes, it's obviously then the communication around it. But I want to know a little bit more about Aralee before we go on. Tell us about where you came from and what brought you to Australia, and why you got into doing what you're doing.
Yeah, so it's a big love story. And I won't go into family story, but there's more love stories there. So I was born in Germany. Both my parents are French. So I like to say I'm a French design made in Germany. So that makes me kind of quirky, but at the same time, very strong. And I traveled quite a lot. I lived in 6 different countries, and I could see that the mindset about different things about life in general, but relationship as well, was very different. And so in 2012, I did a world tour on my own. And the idea was to really find myself. I thought that if I was going to travel on my own, I wouldn't be influenced and I would have to tap into my intuition. I would really have to listen to myself and really honor what feels right and what I love about life. And arrived in Australia, I met an Aussie guy, and I was only meant to stay here for 2 months and then go and continue my trip to South America. But we ended up living together for 4 years, and eventually, well, we broke up. And what's interesting is it's not because we didn't love each other anymore, it's because I had lost myself in the relationship. I had tried to be someone that I was not. I tried to be the best girlfriend as I had seen on TV or in books or how people talk about it, but I'd lost myself, who was like independent with lots of dreams and all that, even though my partner hadn't asked for anything. So the process after that was going to seminars and coaching and really rebuild myself, tap back again into who am I, what do I want for myself, being whole, being 100% me, taking responsibility for my own life. And so in the process, I eventually became a coach, NLP practitioner, and I could see how working on a mindset could shift completely some people's life, including mine. And so that's what I do now. And yeah, as I said, I just love. So it was just obvious for me to choose that niche.
And did you stay in Australia then? That was the decision after being here for so long to stay here, or did you?
Yeah, because after 4 years, I felt like my friends were here. I had my job here because at the time the coaching was just a side business. Also, when people ask me, well, would you go back to France? Right now, I would say no. It's a really beautiful country, really difficult people. I escaped. But, you know, you never know. Like, I didn't plan on staying 10 years in Australia, and I really love my life here. And there's so much to enjoy here. So
I have to ask, because I know people will be thinking about listening, are you in a relationship with an Australian now as well?
No, right. I'm working on it. And so what's very interesting. Yeah. So, well, I'm a leaky plumber, right? I need a me to help me. So I do the work. And
as
I do
all coaches do.
I'm working on different things. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's about being the product of your products. If I do believe in coaching, and that's why I am a coach, and that's why I have a coach. Mm-hmm. And I think, it's not mandatory, but I would recommend anyone to have one, because it gives you that extra perspective, someone outside of your life that has a, you know, like a neutral point of view, what's going on for you. Because I do a lot of journaling, self-coaching, and all that, but like the problem is right in my face and I'm not able to see it. Mm-hmm. So I really need that someone outside of me to see that. And friends are really great as a listening ear and all that, but they're part of my ecosystem, they're part of my environment, and they do share same common beliefs and ideas and stories about life, so they don't provide that objectivity that a coach can provide. But I can share a little story that happened that was last year, where I was like, right, I have enough of being single. So I started writing as if I was a client. So what's not working? And I wrote a long list about it. And then I said, okay, as a coach, what would I say to that woman? What would we do? And I did a process. I don't remember what the process was, but it definitely created a shift, because it's kind of a funny story, but like my fantasy was, because I live close by the beach, that one day as I go for my morning swim, there would be a surfer coming out slow motion running towards me and say, hey, I see you every morning, here's my number. So that was the fantasy, right?
I love the slow motion part. I've got the visual happening.
Yeah. And so the next day after that process, I go for my morning swim. A guy comes in the water, really good looking and having a really good chat, which never happens. Like lots of people come in the water, but we never really have a chat. So we had a really good chat. And he asked me, oh, do you surf? I said, no, would you like to learn? Why not? And so he gave me his number and we went for coffee. So that was close enough from the fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was other things on my list that was very interesting to see how it unraveled afterwards. I started meeting people who I thought didn't exist. So that's really interesting how when you shift a little something, sometimes it's just a little tweak in your mindset, in the way you're looking at life and at things, that brings new opportunities, new situations, new people into your life and you know.
That's great manifesting. There were obviously details you missed in the manifestation when you wrote it, but it was nearly spot on. So well done with that. Now, the difference between Australian men and European men, is there much that you found in relationships and working with clients?
There is a lot, and I actually did two different research. So the first one, I interviewed 58 single people and all happened to be Australian. And one comment that the Australian women made was, we'd love men to come and approach us when we go out, and men don't really do that unless they are European or French and they have a very different approach. They don't wait to be completely wasted to come and talk to us. And that's really nice. Okay. So I'm like, okay, so I have a few French clients. I have my own beliefs as a French person, but I was like, well, I'm not going to generalize. I'm going to do a little bit of research. So that's what I've started doing. And now I'm interviewing some French people to understand how do they see relationships? What does love mean to them? And how does that play out? And the mindset is very different. And I think it's only normal when you live in a different environment that you, like as a kid, that's where most of the programming comes in. You know, you're exposed to different things. And so you react to life in a different way. And so for French people, something that's really important is very deep connection, deep conversation, where it seems that in the Australian culture, there's something where people don't like conflict. French people like conflict. Like if you look at the past, we are a country where we had a revolution. Like people fight for their ideas. It's so important to debate, to like philosophy and all these things, where Australians are like, well, let's keep the peace. Yeah. Let's not, you know, rock the boat. And so that's one of the major things. So it comes through in the communication where French people are very direct. They will say things as they are, whether they're good or not, they've become aware that Australian people tend to use the shit sandwich, where you start with a compliment and then fit in something not so good and then end up with a compliment. So for French people, it's like very confusing. They're like, what are they even talking about? I'm not sure whether that was a good or bad thing. Like,
that's interesting.
So the communication is completely different. And the emotional side of things, like French people are very passionate, like they really are. Like go full in and, you know, make noise and be all
yeah
out.
Well, they just the feelings with the football, you know, losing the World Cup, you know, the emotions there. I just saw so many people and it just in tears. It was just the passion behind football, let alone relationships. Yeah.
But same. And so that's why, like, I'm doing a video series, which is what's the commonalities between French cuisine, fashion, and romance, because essentially those three elements, you know, the depth, the authenticity, and the passion, like, are across those three things that France is famous for. So there's definitely what we are exposed to growing up shapes how we interact with people and how we form our thoughts and the outcomes that we get in life. Now, the people I've been speaking with, the French people, I like to make the distinction that they are French people, how does that translate, from overseas, like they've been living overseas for a while, or they've been exposed to different things as a French person who's lived in France their whole life.
So they're expats in a country somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. And is that different?
Yes. I think it is the same way you would have an Australian who's never come out, like someone from the bush who's always lived in the bush and stayed in the bush would have a different mindset from an Australian person who's traveled the world and might have a more open-minded and trying to understand someone else's mindset or be more accepting of a difference, maybe. Than someone who stayed their whole life in the same environment and therefore not developed this capacity to, you know, look a bit further.
And just even thinking about, you know, how you're brought up, it made me think of it when you think mentioning sort of people coming from the bush. So there's a very good chance that they're possibly brought up with a more work ethic, a stronger work ethic. They're brought up with more manners and treating females with more respect maybe than people that are, you know, from a more urban area. And so that then when people come into relationships together, there's this expectation, unless they've come from the same sort of sense of values and beliefs. And this is what happens, isn't it, when people come from different cultures together, at some stage there might be more difference in the way they feel about things, and that could create a greater divide because it's the values don't match. I know with the talking about the conflict, my brother-in-law and I have always had a relationship where we love debating stuff and we would just get really into it. But my sister and my husband would get very upset with us because they thought we were fighting, arguing, whereas we were just enjoying the space to, you know, to share that level of let's have a great discussion about it. But they just struggled with it so much, we don't do that anymore. Well, I don't bite anymore. I suppose that's part of it. But it was really distinctive that something that we said, that's not a big deal, we're just having fun with it, and that they just, it really cut them both as to, and I know my husband does not like conflict with things. And even thinking about that, so some of the Asian cultures are better at a lot more comfortable with not paying full price on things, and they will always request a discounted price because that's part of their values. So they're communicating a different message. So that communication then has got to be clear. How do people get better at communicating when they're coming in with the different values or different cultures?
There's a few things to take into consideration, and the first thing is the actual language. And because two people speak perfectly the same, like English or French or whatever languages, doesn't guarantee the communication to work. Simply because in NLP we say that words only count for 7% of the communication. Tonality is 38%, and body language is 55%. So typically, if I say, "No, I'm not angry," well, my words didn't count whatsoever. You got that. I was angry. So it's really understanding that communication is way more than the words we use. And the next layer is really getting to know each other and what works for each other. So the values, the needs, the love languages as well. I often share the example with my ex-partner. So his love languages were gifts and words of affirmation. So he would tell me all the time how much he loved me, how beautiful I was, buying me presents. But my love languages are quality time and touch. So I wanted to spend time with him, and I was always on his back, and it was like, "Oh, get away. Like, I'm hot, like move." And for me, it was like, "Oh, he's rejecting me." And it's simply because we communicate love so differently. It doesn't mean we don't love each other. It's just that we don't get it. So what I encourage my clients to do is not only become aware of their own languages, but also become aware of their loved ones, not just their partner, but everyone around them, so that they can better understand where they're coming from and a better way to communicate that love. And in the frame of a couple, using all these tests and quizzes and techniques to start a conversation and have fun with it, especially when the love languages are so different, like make it a joke that, "Oh, see, I'm cooking a meal for you. That's your act of service." being really playful. Because I think there's that's a very strong element that's getting lost, where more and more, and I think that's a reflection of a very consumerist kind of society where even relationships are starting to be very transactional, and we see that with the apps. where I give you that, so you give me this. And we forget to add the fun, to add the romance, to add the little bits in the middle, the magic, what makes it special, rather than just, yeah, like almost machine, kind of well-oiled machine structure.
Yeah, yeah. I love the Love Languages book. And whenever I've had couples and any friends' children that get engaged, I've always given them the book, The Five Love Languages, because it does help clarify things. Really interesting. My husband's is acts of service. And mine's not. I don't even think about that at all. You know, you just do the things. It's not that that's what you do for a reason. It's not the way you show love. But I it's really interesting. I'll go and present somewhere, and they may have Subway and cookies as part of the lunch, and they'll always have leftovers. I'll bring home some leftovers, and it's the biggest thing. It's not the food, it's that I thought to do it. It adds to the bank a lot if I do something small like that. And it is, knowing that that's so important to him. I mean, I wouldn't do it otherwise, but I know those little things are really important, and it does. It makes a big difference. So I find it, you know, obviously I've known him well enough now that I know that that's his love language. So it's so important. Yeah, and there's usually two that are primary. It's a primary and a secondary, isn't there?
Yes, yeah. Here you look at the two top ones, which for a lot of people, it's easy to pick which one they are. But yeah, the test can help. And so I gave it to someone recently, and he was like, I don't get it. All the sentences are the same. I said, no, have a closer look. They all have the same intention. They're all communicating love. Mm. But there's this nuance on how you communicate it. And that's the subtlety, and that's where sometimes it gets missed.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yes, we went out to dinner one night and sat through and did the questions in the book. So that was interesting. That was fun. It was good. And what's other interesting thing about us too, the secondary for both of us is a quality time, but the quality time is different. Mm-hmm. So it's not, one is more engaged and one is just being. Again, recognizing differences. And it's so important to be able to communicate that, isn't it?
Yes. So when I do the work on the values, for example, with my clients, I always get them to define when you say freedom or connection or fun or health is your highest value. What does that mean for you? Mm. Because we all attach a different meaning, a different definition to the words. And so if connection is a big one for you and you like a hug, well, maybe your partner also has connection in one of their top values, but for them, it's something completely different. Mm. So it's really important to, again, have an open conversation. And that's where the communication, but the depth in the communication needs to be established in the relationship. It's not just living together next to each other and letting the time go. It's really, it's work. Relationship is work. Sorry for people when the time is right and when you find the right person, it magically works. No, it's work.
Sorry, I interrupted. That's such an important factor to know and realize, isn't it? It's not just going to be all that honeymoon phase and roses. There's going to be things that we don't like what the other person does, and there'll be things they don't like, things that we do as well, and working through it.
But coming back to, you know, people are a reflection of ourselves. If there's something that's triggered and we heal it within ourselves, then no matter what the other person does or say, then it won't flare up within ourselves. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's just going to, you know, slide on you. It's not going to trigger you, make you angry, sad or whatever emotions attached to that. So it's really like noticing what are the triggers, healing them within yourself, and that shift the whole dynamic, the whole relationship. So that's a gift for both parties in the relationship when you can do the work on yourself.
And just healing those triggers, is there something that, you know, that through processes that you work through, obviously, with people, is there something that you can share that might help people listening who have a trigger maybe when someone doesn't close all the doors of everything? Just saying, the best fridge that we've got now beeps when the doors aren't closed. And it's, we've had it for 2 years. It is awesome.
But it's understanding what does that actually mean for you. So it's going a step further. It's like, well, it doesn't close the door. So it's not about the door. It's what does that actually mean? Do you associate that with, oh, it doesn't care about me, or, oh, it doesn't care about the cost of electricity and I am paying the bills? Or what's the story you attach to it? Mm-hmm. And that's the bit that you want to work on, because the cupboard itself is very, you know, very neutral. It's just a circumstance. So I do one exercise sometimes in workshops where you might have heard that saying that we are the average of the five people we spend the most time with. So if you look at the five people around you and you write down then something annoying about them, it doesn't have to be something huge. It can be the bite their nails, or the way they laugh, or they don't close the door of the cupboard. And then doing that work of, what does that actually mean for me? Like, when they do this, that triggers something. Otherwise, you wouldn't notice it. Like, if it was just out of your scope, like, would ignore it. Yeah. And then from there, say, well, where am I doing that? Because that might be you might be doing it in a very different way, a different area of life. So someone biting their nails for you, that might be triggering, or they're very stressed. So where in your life are you stressed? And that might be manifesting in a very different way. And someone might be stressed in their family life, but someone might be very stressed in the business life. So if you can see it in someone else, it's essentially a mirror of you and an opportunity for you to work on it.
That's
in the little things.
Yeah, that's really helpful, Orly, that clarity and finding why it's triggering you, or why it bothers you. And because that's so important, not just in a, like, you know, partnership relationship, but with people that you work with. And there'll be things that you that will really trigger you and create a lot more angst. And I think when we're in a work relationship, most of us, I know from my experience, most women will not confront it and not deal with it, but then they'll take it home. And if something of that same trigger happens, then the person usually that's in the house is the one that cops it, but not necessarily the work people. Again, because we don't like conflict, but if we're in a partnership, we tend to be a little bit more comfortable with conflict. Am I right with that?
Yes. Yeah. And that's where it's really important to take full responsibility for you as a person, as a unit, because a lot of people take the relationship as the dumping ground, you know, like you said, like you take the worry or the stress from work at home and expecting the partner to cope with that. Why? Like, your partner is here to share life. And yes, maybe you would share a bit of what's going on for you, but they're not your therapist. So you need to be able to handle your thoughts and process your thoughts and your emotions. So that's where a third party is very helpful for that. I was going to say something about conflict. What was that? I lost my train of thought.
If there's conflict in the workplace, then, and obviously communication is such an important factor, but it's not necessarily something you're working on with people that love language, or it just has to be, you've got those other relationships around you, don't you? And it's how you deal with those and looking at yourself and how that works.
A lot of the time conflict arises when we try to impose our own model of the world on someone else's. Typically, I do it this way. Why don't you understand? Why don't you do it this way? So that's trying to impose your own model of the world without giving the other one the opportunity to explain why they did it differently, or why it makes most sense for them. So it's really about, like, to create a safe space is the the foundation to resolve conflict. So building rapport, to create a space for the person to be real, to be able to share what's going on for them, and without judging and without trying to change them or bringing your point of view, but really just say, hey, I'm a safe space, you can share whatever, and that's not going to change my point of view. And then from there, yes, you can share. But if the person doesn't feel safe enough to share what's going on for them, then they're more likely to hide things, build resentment, and eventually it's going to end up in a bigger conflict, or someone leaving the company, or someone mm-hmm. leaving the relationship without even discussing it. And that's mm-hmm. where we have people walking out of marriage and saying, but I thought everything was going well, just because the other one shut down all the way. They never felt safe enough to actually voice what was going on for them. It doesn't mean that the other partner was mean or whatever. It just meant that someone had some insecurities that might have existed for ages ago, from childhood even, but they've never addressed that. And so over time, it's killing the relationship, or, you know, the sabotaging their work experience as well.
I know, yes. And I've known so many, particularly men, where the wives have gone, I'm leaving the relationship, we need a divorce, and they've gone, what did I miss? That they haven't really noticed that there's been, that it's been that bad, that needs to happen. And it's part of that. The woman has felt that they were communicating, but the men haven't heard it. And it's both ways, but the ones I'm thinking of have tended to be the men that have gone, I don't know what that's about. I missed that memo.
Yeah. Because sometimes there's this idea, I've communicated, I was clear, but were you or not? What was the setting of the communication? And there's a lot of mind reading happening in relationships. So, if he loves me, he would know, or she would know. You know, just assuming that because it's love, the other person can read your mind. No. Yeah. They might know you very well because they experience you every day, but still they are human, processing, you know, thoughts, emotion, being exposed to different things, reacting to different things. And you can be sleeping in the same bed every night and still have no idea what's going on in that person's head. So it's really important to give each other the space to express what's going on without trying to change again, because men have the tendency of wanting to fix. So there's this assumption that if we men start to talk, and women like to talk and often vote just to offload, men are like, okay, well, if you're sharing that with me, it's because you want me to bring a solution. No, not necessarily. I just want to be heard. I just want to be seen. I just want to be appreciated. So, yeah, the intention behind the communication is another layer of the communication itself. It's what are you expecting from this communication? When you share something.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I know some couples that have split and they get on better now because they have less expectation from the other partner.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what it really boils down to. So as long as they're, you know, communicating, whether they're dealing with or without children, whatever, but they have less expectation. So they can let things go as well if somebody doesn't meet their standards as they were in the relationship, which explains a lot of, you know, that clarifies from a lot of the things that you've been saying as to why that happens.
There's the idea that when you're married, this is, you know, a certain model of being married means you need to do this to be a certain person. That's maybe very far from who you were before. And that's where we see people who were together for 7-11 years suddenly get married and the marriage just lasts 1 year. And you're like, what happened? You were well for 12 years and now? And that's just that shifting that mindset and feeling like you have to fit a certain model of the world, which is not yours as a person or as a couple, that just destroys the relationship in the end, because no one finds themselves anymore. No one can be genuinely who they are or be themselves.
Absolutely. And look, we've got a lot of friends that have been, you know, very long-term marriages themselves, and they're all so different. Some are, you know, constantly every moment of every day together, and then the other end of it is like my husband and I, that we have a lot of our own interests, and we come together with those bring those interests back into the relationship, but neither's really interested in each other's one. They just go and do it separately and then come back. So it's all a matter of what works for different people, isn't it? Because people would look at us and go, oh, well, then not spending any time together, but as I said, quality time's our thing, but it's important for that. Yes, and but the quality time with other people is important to us as well. So it's not just the partnership love language, yes. It's recognizing what works for each of you also, doesn't it? Yeah.
So yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So we've covered a lot of different topics, and it's such a fascinating subject. You know, relationships is something we're dealing with every day, all the time. Communicating, unless we're living a hermit life and not talking to anybody at any time. If we're, you know, talking about takeaways, that things to think about that people can go and apply and that will be of benefit, what would you suggest that? And well, usually I'm stumbling over words now, Janine. I've got so much, I'm thinking about so many different concepts and applications here. So that's why I'm stumbling over my words, because I'm thinking about how you would apply different parts of it. And which is a really good sign, Aralee, that's from what we've talked about. Three takeaways. We usually offer three takeaways at the end so people can apply themselves and think about what they're doing.
Yes. So the first thing would be projection is perception. So what you see outside of you is essentially a reflection of you. And the one relationship you'll stick with for your entire life, no matter who's around you, is your relationship to yourself. So that's the one you need to nurture and you need to work on. So really use those people around you as a mirror of parts of you that are manifesting, and use that to become aware and do the work. The next bit is focus on what you want, not what you don't want. Because a lot of people, when I start the work with them, I'll ask, what do you want in a partner or in a relationship? And they tell me, I don't want him to be like this or don't like that or not do this. I'm like, well, what do you actually want? Because that's what you're going to focus on. So if you're focusing on negative things, that's what you attract or what you will notice more in your life. So really focus on what you want. And the last part is trust the process. When you try to control and micromanage every single bit, even the love languages, even all the tools I might share, that's where it becomes very inflexible, very difficult. So just be a normal human, I'd say.
I love that. Not trying to micromanage everything. Because it does, then that brings stress into yourself and distress if the things don't go to plan. And I like to control, but what I've learned over the years is to be flexible in that space as well. And that took a lot of learning for me. But when I can do that, it just means that I remove the stress of having to be in control. And it's really interesting, the more control that I give up, the more people come into my life who can take over a certain component, and it's not something I have to even think, oh, that'll be right, that'll work, which is really interesting concept as well. So that's not, definitely not micromanaging things. And I just let go the things that aren't important. There'll be things I think that's my tip is just to, there'll be things that are important and aren't, and just if there doesn't matter in 10 minutes time, doesn't matter in a week's time, and if it doesn't, then let it go. And I think the other part with relationships, just we hear that people come into our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And it's just recognizing that I'm a good collector of people, and that's letting go when it's time is really difficult for me. And I had to, learn over the years that it's something that you need to do, and to support yourself and to support them as well.
Very often when you shift within yourself, when you find more respect, love, strength, whatever it is, people who don't resonate with that anymore, somehow this slide out of your life. You don't even really have to do too much of an effort. Like, they just stop texting you, or you stop texting them, or whatever it is. Like, there's no more reason to hang around each other. So it kind of happens naturally when you do shift towards more of what you do want and who you want to be, and gravitate around people that actually bring the best in you or closer to your goals in your life. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%, 100% agree. How can people work with you or get in touch with you, Arlene?
Yep. So if people want to get in touch, you can check out my email. So it's aureliehervet.com, or give me a call. Yep.
Excellent.
So I work one-on-one or in groups.
Okay. All right. That, and what, group workshops? Is that the type of thing that you do then?
So my next program is starting on the 2nd of February, and it's called The French Art of Seduction. And so that's a 6 weeks program where we get to unpack what's been holding you back, and getting closer to the truth of who you are, being your most authentic self, and learn how to communicate so that if you're single, you can attract someone who aligns with who you are and what you want in your life. If you're in a relationship, but take your relationship to the next level, or to better understand what's actually not working so well at this point. So it's a really lovely program. It's very much like I teach some principles, but there's also a life coaching component and a community that's here to share the experience, what's going on for them. And yeah, that's a really beautiful container. I really love teaching that one.
Oh, excellent. Sounds terrific, actually. So in the show notes, you'll have Aurelie's website address, email address, how to reach out to her on different social media. I've really enjoyed our conversation. And as I said, you know, I'm stumbling over words, thinking about different applications, which is awesome. It's always great to learn. And I just had news today that, and posted something up on LinkedIn, including, you know, a whole lot of people that have been on the different podcasts in the past. And we've hit, in New Zealand, it's rated as the number 83. And with, there's 2.4 million podcasts in the world. So I figure 83 on a business podcast in New Zealand is pretty good. So I was chuffed with that. And 169 in New Zealand.
Is number 83.
Yeah. Yeah, 169 overall. Wow. I thought that was very cool. Yeah, yeah, which is awesome. I thanked, you know, all people that have been on the podcast over the last few years, and I continue to do it because I learn something every time, and I'm sure that my audience does. And I've had wonderful guests on, like yourself today, Aurelie. So I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity to share more about love. So I loved it. We can never
have enough love, can we? And that's this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosper, your host. Remember to go to janinevosper.com and book in a strategy call if you are looking for some clarity in what you're doing in life and in business, not sure what steps to take next. If I can't help you, I have a full range of people that I can suggest that might be able to work with you. Have a fantastic day, week, month, whatever you are up to at the moment. And I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.